You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new group of Wisconsinites will be eligible for the coronavirus vaccine at the end of the month, including people with conditions like cancer, high blood pressure, and diabetes. We'll find out more from a Wisconsin expert. Now, Facebook recently began an ad campaign that tells users how beneficial personalized and targeted ads are for you as a user and for small businesses. Those messages are Facebook's response to new, stricter privacy guidelines from Apple. In order to create personalized targeted ads, Facebook needs to gather data from other apps that you use, something Apple will soon make them ask permission to do. A technology reporter is here to break down what these privacy guidelines could mean for you and why Facebook and Apple are on opposite sides. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you heard about these changes Apple is making? What questions do you have? Do you like the idea? Big picture, how would you like to see your personal data protected and or used? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Alfred Ng is a reporter for The Markup. He covers surveillance, privacy, and the impact of technology. Alfred, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, this all is in the backdrop, or there's a backdrop of a really big issue over data privacy here. Give us the particulars, though, on this Apple versus Facebook. What's going on here?
Yeah, so this was an Apple announcement that they made back in summer of 2020, where they basically said, from starting soon, if you want to track users and if you want to connect, you know, their activity across apps. So let's say I'm using one app and then all of a sudden another app that I'm using knows that I happen to use that app or what I've been doing on that app, they now have to get permission for that. And that is a big issue for Facebook because the bulk of their data collection doesn't just come from you posting on Facebook or you telling Facebook, I like this particular band or anything like that. There's a lot of apps that have trackers embedded within them. And Facebook is one of these many trackers where, you know, if I use an app to check something like basketball scores or something like that, if Facebook has a tracker in that app, it'll tell Facebook, hey, Alfred likes basketball. And then they'll know, they'll be able to build up a profile of me and be able to target me that way. And the data privacy issue with that is that many of these trackers are working off the premise of an opt-out model where, you know, you have to go and explicitly tell these apps, hey, I don't like being tracked across all my apps. Please stop doing that. Whereas what Apple is saying right now is once this update comes along, you will actually have to ask, hey, can we track you rather than the other way around?
So the way this might work, and check me if I have this wrong, this could go a couple different ways. If I see an ad today on Facebook or Instagram, same company, and a few days later search for that on Google and buy that product, if they're tracking that, they can call that a win and tell their advertiser, hey, your ad worked, and vice versa. If I'm searching for products on Google, that can help inform them of what ads to show me on Facebook. With the current system, that's easy for them to do, right?
Yeah, it's extremely easy for them to do, especially because a lot of these tracking mechanisms, they can be customized to be very granular, where it is, you know, the examples that you gave, where if I look at one product, even though I don't buy it immediately, if I see an ad for it later on, and it can even be like a full month later, and I finally decide, hey, I'm going to buy this product, Facebook, yeah, collects that metric and says, hey, we know that, you know, this person saw this ad, and you spent money with us to show it to them, so this is a sign of success here. You should continue spending money with us. Now that that's kind of gone until somebody opts in, it kind of gives advertisers, you know, a little bit of pause here of should I continue to spend Facebook ads because I don't actually know if my money is getting what it's worth.
Now, why is Apple saying they're doing this?
So Apple has been saying that they're doing this because they've been staking their ground on privacy being the issue that separates them from their competitors, where, you know, they, unlike Facebook and unlike Google, they don't sell, you know, ads. Their big thing is selling their products, and privacy is a big part of that as well. You know, they also advertise themselves on security, and that is a big part of their marketing issue, but they also, it, for them, it's a big part of what distinguishes them from their competitors.
We are talking about data privacy, a dispute now between Apple and Facebook. Alfred Ng is with us, reporter for The Markup. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does it creep you out that anything you do on an app or online is likely to be shared with any social media outlet you're using, especially the Facebooks and Instagrams of the world? Or do you find it convenient that the ads you see wherever you go are things that, yeah, you might want to buy sometime? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Alfred, to the bigger picture now, how much of a dossier on any individual internet and app user does a company like Facebook have?
Well, what Facebook likes to say is that, you know, they don't have a specific individual dossier when they're selling to advertisers, right? They're not saying, hey, we have all this information on Alfred. You want to sell this ad to him specifically. They're saying that, you know, we have this all this information on people ages 18 to 34 that live in New York and that might be interested in basketball. But that's not to say that this kind of information can't be eventually de-anonymized. And that's kind of the main issue with it, where, you know, Apple is not giving Facebook or any of these apps like my personal name or my address or anything like that, but they are giving them a lot of data points where if you work backwards enough, you'll be able to figure that out. Where with location data, for example, you know, every company that sells location data will say this is anonymized, but location data is very hard to keep anonymous, right? Where if you get location data and it leads right to my doorsteps, it's like, it's very likely that, you know, they'll be able to figure out who lives there and then be able to tie that data back to me.
Now, you've followed this over the years. Facebook has run into trouble with what it does with this data and who it sells it to or allows access to it. What kind of problems have we seen?
Yeah, obviously, you know, there were a lot of concerns in 2018 with Facebook and the data analytics from Cambridge Analytica, a firm out of the UK that was working with these political groups, you know, Brexit being one of them, the Trump campaign being another one of them, where they were collecting this data from people that they weren't using it. They weren't expecting the data that they were giving to Cambridge Analytica to be used for political campaigns, right? The data that they had given to Facebook was off of these personality tests, like what kind of music do you like? What kind of, friends, like superheroes are you into, that kind of stuff. And then that just got turned right around and then used by these firms to say, okay, well, we're going to target this specific area to say, you know, you should vote, like you should come to this rally. And I think that was one of the main issues of like seeing how, you know, this data that you thought was just this fun little tool was being given really without your consent and was just being openly traded like that for you know, political purposes.
And on the theme of politics, you've written a couple pieces on something that Facebook agreed to stop doing, pushing and promoting particular kinds of political groups to people. Not cases where you go out and look for a political group, but kind of promoting them. What's going on with that story?
Yeah, so around October, Mark Zuckerberg was at a Senate hearing where he had told senators, you know, we're going to be pausing recommending political groups because there had been research saying that, you know, a large percentage of extremist groups, people who joined them on Facebook, were they joined because Facebook's algorithm recommended them to do it. So Mark Zuckerberg had told the Senate that Facebook was going to put a pause on that until after the election. If you listen to Facebook's most recent earnings call, they actually mentioned that they were going to put a pause on that permanently. But before that had happened, we had found that from October until January 19th or so, Facebook was still continuing to recommend political groups, which they chalked up to a technical error.
Alfred Ng is with us, reporter for The Markup. He covers the impact of technology. He's helping us break down what Apple's new privacy guidelines will mean for social media and why it has Facebook in particular unhappy. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Do you like the targeted ads you might get on Facebook or Instagram or elsewhere? Do you worry about how your information gets used by online advertisers and others? Do you think we need more protections for our data privacy, or are you not worried about that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Alfred Ng, technology reporter for The Markup. We're breaking down Apple's new privacy standards, how they may change how social media operates on your phone, if you have one of their phones, and talking about wider issues of our data and who does what with it. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your concerns about who's tracking you when you do stuff online or with an app. And you can answer the question, do you like getting ads targeted to you for particular products that you might actually buy? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Alfred, as somebody who studies these issues and pays a lot of attention to them, does it affect the way you use apps and the internet?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I try to have as many ad blockers. I mean, I only really use one ad blocker, but, you know, on all the devices that I use, I try to have ad blockers on that. I think, like, there's a very small percentage of people that read privacy policies before they actually use something. And I am very much like in a part of that percentage. And yeah, it's if I don't have to use an app to do something, I try not to. But that has been a little bit frustrating when it comes to like ordering food.
Fair. And now with an ad blocker, I mean, I don't see the ad then, but is somebody still tracking what I'm doing on that page, even if I don't see the ad?
Yeah, you can still be tracked even if you're not getting an ad or anything like that. So if you're using Google Chrome, for example, you're basically operating within Google's ecosystem there, and your browsing habits and that kind of stuff is being sent to Google. It's not being sent to Google and it's saying, you know, attached to a name or anything like that, but a lot of this information is being collected for advertising purposes.
Are there efforts afoot to change that, to limit the overall ecosystem of who's tracking us when we're doing stuff?
Yeah, so Google actually made an announcement last week about this where last year they said that they were getting rid of this thing called a third-party cookies, where that's essentially what's being used right now to track you across, you know, all these multiple websites where a website will have a cookie embedded on it and you'll go on it and then go to another website that might have that same cookie there, that then it'll be able to link like the behaviors of you specifically. So Google said that they're not going to be supporting that anymore within a couple of years. But what they're doing now instead is they're focusing on this thing called like a flock. And where instead of them tracking me individually, they're trying to put, you know, a group to it instead, where it's like aggregated and it's multiple. You're separated into these groups that advertisers can you know, target, you know, ads to instead of just focusing on an individual person. So it's all still tracking, but they're saying that it's more privacy focused because you're being tracked within a large group rather than like you individually.
So we're being bundled in effect.
Yeah, their flock is supposed to stand for something like federated learning of cohorts, and the cohorts are what they're calling these groups.
Now, Facebook has said, well, hold on, if you don't let these advertisements work, you're going to hurt small businesses. And I hear people say, well, if you have ad blockers, maybe that journalistic website isn't getting paid for your visit. Are there concerns that this could hurt revenue for legitimate companies trying to do good stuff?
Yeah, so Facebook has been, you know, using the argument of, you know, we're doing these personalized ads for small businesses. These are specifically these small businesses that rely on targeted advertising, right? So it's something that's like a very niche business that needs a very niche audience to be able to thrive. But, you know, Tim Cook on January 28th, he had given a speech talking about how you don't really need all of this level of data about a person to be able to target ads to people. You know, television networks have been doing this for decades, where they've been relying on something called contextual advertising instead, where I don't need to follow a person around all day to know like what their interests are. If I set up like a sports website and somebody comes to my website, like I'll know that this person is interested in sports. I don't need to track them around across the entire internet to do that.
We had a question from Mary in Green Bay who wonders how clearing your cookies impacts this kind of tracking.
Yeah, so cookies are basically kind of a way for a website to remember you. So when you go on a website and you're already logged in, that's because the cookies are there to set it. So when you clear your cookies, you're essentially telling this website, like, I'm a completely new person. You don't know who I am. So that's what, you know, clearing your cookies does. But I mean, the moment you log back into your account, assuming it's a website that has like a login or anything like that, then it's kind of like, oh, I know who you are. Let's like load all that data back up for you again.
Now, how does Facebook know that the product you're looking to buy is the result of you seeing an ad for it on Facebook as opposed to, you know, seeing it elsewhere later? We were talking about that a little earlier, how Facebook rings up a win for that ad they put on.
Yeah, so you're tracked on your own through these apps through something called, if you're using an Apple device, it's something called an IDFA. It's an identifier for advertisers. If you're on a Google device, it's a Google advertising identifier where it's not like your name or anything like that. It's not an ID that you've ever signed up for. It's just a random string of like characters and numbers that's supposed to represent you. And you know, a lot of apps like will collect this IDFA and just a bunch of data associated with it. So if I'm looking at something for a very long time, they'll collect that IDFA. And then once I go to purchase something, if I'm using my phone to buy it, the IDFA is a part of that as well. And they'll be able to connect the two. Even like I said, even if it's like a full month later or something like that, if the IDFA is associated with it, it's very easy to link the two like behaviors.
That's all the time we have. Alfred, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Alfred Ng, reporter for The Markup. He talked to us about Apple's new privacy restrictions and how they could change things for social media companies. His story on the topic will be published tomorrow. You can find it at themarkup.org. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a new book out of La Crosse.
The story of Sai and Sia is a Hmong folktale of a young woman's journey to the netherworld to save her husband and bring him back to life. Wisconsin author Bo Shong expands on this traditional tale in her new book, Folklore, where she imagines the story behind Sia's courage. Hope Kerwin sat down with Shong in La Crosse to hear her take on the folktale and the power of belief.
Thousands of years ago, when the stars were young, in the times of gods and demons, old magic and ghostly encounters, the spirits were envious of humans, and fate had often tested lovers. All the odds were against Sai and Sia, two lovers compelled to go on a very miraculous journey. Hi, I'm Bo Shong. I'm local here to La Crosse. I am the founder of Moth House Press. I first heard the story of Sai and Sia probably when I was in grade school. Every night my mom would tell us stories. I mean, we would always go to sleep with some kind of tall tale. Essentially, Hmong folklore is orally told stories. Not a lot of it has been recorded or published. So it makes it very unique. And every time somebody tells the story, it's a little bit different. So the second time when I heard the story of Sai and Sia again, it was about 2 years ago. And mom and I, we were driving at 6 a.m. to Farmer's Market. And I was like, hey, Mom, you know, the hero of the story is actually the wife. And my mother disagrees with me. And she says, no, I think it's the husband because, you know, he has supernatural powers and she wouldn't survive without him. But I was like, but the story, the wife saves him. And she goes on more than one journey to do that. And I was like, that makes her the hero of the story. As a young girl growing up, I didn't realize, you know, that we had any stories based on strong female characters. This story definitely has one. And for years, I never thought of it that way because of the way it was told. Whenever they talk about Sia, they cut her actions or her events short. So I created a hero's journey for her for the second portion of the story. There's a lot of very, like, bizarre supernatural events that happen in the original oral story. So I just wanted to make sense of it all for the readers. Nobody really knows about our culture and our beliefs, so why are all these things happening? So I just wanted to establish in chapter one with this conversation between the two of them. We're close to the village. The locals say the woods are home to the spirits, said Sai. Folklore around here is full of cautionary tales. The people believe in them, so we keep out of the woods. You don't believe in them, asked Sia. They could just be stories, said Sai. He glanced over his shoulder to check on his parents in the carriage behind them. Her husband doesn't want to give in to the superstitions because he believes that if you believe in them, they become real. I think that's a big part of it. Like, belief does make things real. I wrote this book with an intention just to help record and preserve some of these stories that I feel like would be lost with the older generations. I would say that not a lot of people Hmong Americans today who are the younger generation speak Hmong. And that's very hard to believe, but not a lot of them do. But I also want new readers who are just interested in dark fantasies and dark romances and superstition and lore to also discover new stories. I don't understand how an old ghost story can keep elders and villagers out of an entire forest, says I. Surely the spirits of the dead cannot wield such power over the living. You may be right, but some of the stories are true, said Sia. Sai turned back to his wife. Did you hear this from someone you know? Yes, replied Sia. Someone I knew.
WPR's Hope Kerwin brought us that story on Bo Shong, a La Crosse author with a new book, Folklore. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, Wisconsinites with certain medical conditions will be eligible for the coronavirus vaccine by the end of this month. We'll find out who that can include, what the vaccine supply looks like between now and then, and get answers to your questions with a Wisconsin healthcare expert. Plus, we'll get a new report on how people who are already eligible are working to find vaccines, given there's not enough supply for the demand just yet. Vaccines and answers to your questions coming up. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, 20 states are looking to pass new laws that will impact the transgender community. Those backing the new measures claim the bills help protect those too young to give informed consent to powerful medication. LGBTQ advocates say it's an organized assault by conservative groups. Trans teens and the fight over health care today at 6 on 1A+. Now, as more Wisconsin residents become eligible for vaccination against COVID-19, more people will be on the hunt for vaccine appointments themselves. WPR's Bram Sable-Smith has been speaking with people who found appointments and has some tips.
Robin Davis was thrilled to learn her family was eligible for COVID-19 vaccines on March 1st. The 56-year-old has mostly hunkered down in her Milwaukee home with her son and daughter, both adults on the autism spectrum.
Very depressing because we've been at home 24/7.
Davis has her own physical disabilities, and all three of them are part of Wisconsin's self-directed program for adults with disabilities. That's how they qualified for the vaccine. But like many in Wisconsin, Davis was uncertain about how to book an appointment. That's when she saw a news story about a Facebook group where Wisconsinites were sharing tips about finding a shot.
And so I requested to join right away, and then I told my story. And then Bob, he said to direct message him. I did that.
Bob is Bob Orrick, a retail manager in Germantown, who started the Facebook group Milwaukee and Wisconsin Area Vaccine Hunters and Angels.
That one became like my own personal mission to get them, all three of them, vaccinated.
Orrick connected Davis with a Walgreens pharmacist he had met through the group. She and her children were vaccinated the next day. It's one of many success stories for the group that has something of a mantra: ask for help.
And to see all the positive that this page is doing and all these messages, DMs, and text messages I'm getting, that's what's been so just kind of inspiring with all this.
Scheduling vaccine appointments can be more straightforward. That doesn't mean it's easy, though. here are some tips that other Wisconsin residents have found successful. The first is to go through your medical provider. That's what 67-year-old Lisa Kirchberg did. She got a letter from her doctor saying she was eligible and could book an appointment over the phone. She followed the instructions and received her first dose in February.
And they were very good there. You know, they had you sit for 15 minutes and, you know, it was real clean and good spacing. And, you know, some places aren't like that, but it was. So that was nice.
Each medical provider has its own system for booking vaccine appointments. And tip number two is to research where to go. The state maintains a searchable map of vaccine providers, but appointment slots can fill up fast. Bob Work says members of his group glean patterns revealing the best time to book at certain locations. Walgreens, for example, seems to open new appointments at 6 a.m. daily, a worm for the early birds. Work says they're still trying to figure out the other pharmacies, like CVS.
So they're still kind of a nut to uncrack.
Being willing to travel can possibly open up more appointments as well. Tip number three, ask for leftovers. Some providers will have leftover vaccine doses at the end of the day because of canceled appointments. Rather than letting them go to waste, Ork says some have lists of people that can show up on short notice.
And I will tell you, it is working with people getting doses that way.
Now, if it seems like these tips for booking appointments favors the tech savvy and people with time, you're not alone. Hashim Zabak noticed the same thing. He's a founder and pharmacist at Hyatt Pharmacy in Milwaukee. Their solution is to offer walk-in appointments that allow people to forgo the online booking process altogether.
We've had slow days when we just vaccinated 50 or 60 people, and we've had some really, really busy days that we were getting close to 1,000 a day.
Regardless of how you approach it, there is one more tip for getting a vaccine. Be patient. The state is making progress, and the general population is expected to be eligible in May. Bram Sablesmith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
That story comes from a reporting partnership between WPR and Wisconsin Watch. You can hear more from Bram tomorrow night at 7. He joins New York Times investigations and health policy reporter Sarah Cliff to share insights from inside the pandemic and answer your questions. Join in for that free event presented via Zoom tomorrow at 7 p.m. You can register on the calendar at WPR.org/events. Now, as we're hearing, millions of Wisconsinites with certain high-risk health conditions will be eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine as part of the next phase, 1C, of the state's vaccine rollout that comes into effect later this month. And in the mix, President Biden last week directed states to make all American adults eligible no later than May 1st. You could join in at 800-642-1234 if you've been vaccinated or you're halfway there. What's the process been like for you? Do you have questions about who's eligible next? About what to expect with the vaccine, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Patrick Remington is a professor emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Good to be back, Rob.
Well, as we just heard there, even when you're eligible for the vaccine, doesn't mean there's enough vaccine for you just yet. Can you talk about that sort of that expectations game as more categories of people get eligible for the vaccine?
Well, spring is a time of transition. We had nice weather over the weekend, and now it's back to winter. And I think with the COVID vaccine, it's going to be a time of transition. We've been in a scarce sort of a time of scarcity where there's been more demand than vaccine. And so things like, ways to get the vaccine have popped up using technology or friends or family connections. But we're going to transition to a time when there'll be more vaccine than demand. And that will happen probably certainly by May. So I just encourage people that if you're eligible, reach out to get an appointment and then be patient because your time will come. It's been a year since this pandemic arrived in Wisconsin and in this country. And I think we just have to remember that. This is not the time to drop your guard, to stop using masks and doing careful hand washing and avoiding group gatherings. Now is the time to continue that, be patient. And within weeks, certainly by the end of April, you'll have a chance to get a vaccine.
I wanted to ask what you think of our vaccine rollout so far. We had kind of a slow start, but now we lead the nation on the measure of, you know, the amount of vaccine we've used over, compared to the supply we have. We're, you know, in above the national average for first and second doses. What are you seeing in the Wisconsin vaccine rollout?
Well, I think it's amazing. Our public health departments, our local health systems have been working around the clock, not just on tracking cases and doing isolation and quarantine recommendations, but now rolling out vaccines. It's really hard to imagine how much a burden this has been on our public institutions, and they are just doing a great job. This is no small task to vaccinate as much as 60, 70, maybe 80 or 90% of the population. So I think it's, you know, you can always look at the glass being half empty and say that we've wasted, you know, a fraction of a percent of doses. But I look at the fact that we've gotten a safe vaccine. It's a very effective vaccine, and it is thousands of times safer than getting the illness. So we've done a lot more good than any problems in the system.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Reggie with us in Oshkosh. Reggie, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Reggie?
I'm a truck driver locally in Oshkosh, and I wanted to know, you know, we're in 15, 20 businesses a day. You know, we're good enough to haul the vaccine, but why aren't we essential enough to get it yet?
Reggie, thanks a lot for that call. And I know there are questions about a bunch of different lines of work. I think restaurant workers now have made the cut, but some factory workers and, in Reggie's case, truck drivers, not eligible yet. Can you talk about that, those decisions, Dr. Remington?
Well, this is just a time of scarcity. There's no right or wrong way. You just have to make decisions. And I could argue in Reggie's on behalf, and that truck drivers, people who are out in public, certainly are essential workers, and they should be top priority. But unfortunately, right now, we just don't have enough vaccine to go around. The priority that the state has looked at is to have the next group be those who are at risk of getting sick, so that it's not simply getting infected, but it's looking at people with chronic conditions who, if infected, might get very sick, might be hospitalized, and might die. So, again, anytime you set priorities, there are going to be people who fall below the line. But I would just remember that it's been a year, that within the next few weeks, that eligibility line will be extending, and that by May 1, I'm confident that everybody in Wisconsin who wants a vaccine can get an appointment and get a vaccine.
Thanks for the call, Reggie. We'll go to Becca now in Portage. Becca, hi.
Hello. I wanted to say I saw a bunch of people on Facebook really frustrated going through their health care. And I actually called a pharmacy and got on their leftover list. And, I mean, you got to say, you know, at the end of the day, if they have leftovers, I mean, you got to say you'll be there, you know, when they want you there, because they don't want it to go to waste. But I got both vaccines that way. And then also I just wanted to say, you know, my husband, we got scheduled through Walgreens, and it was real easy. You just go online and watch for the appointments and sign up. So definitely think outside the box for sure. Yeah.
Becca, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, those use it or lose it vaccines at the end of the day. I mean, it's good news that even if they're not going to people in the highest priority group, it's better than having them go to waste, right?
Well, absolutely. I love the way Becca said, you know, that use it or lose it. Now is the time. If you have an opportunity to get vaccinated, and certainly in those cases where vaccines might go to waste, take advantage of that. And also, she said, think outside the box. Don't think of the clinic as the only place that you can get a vaccine. Typically, we get our healthcare there. We get most vaccines are administered in healthcare settings, but this is unusual. These are unusual times when we have to use every resource available, and pharmacies have stepped up. They deliver high-quality health services. They can provide vaccinations to people efficiently and effectively. And again, I would say take advantage of any opportunity. Don't sort of delay. If an opportunity comes up, you're not really taking that away from somebody else. Now's the time for everybody who can get vaccinated, if you're eligible, to go ahead and get vaccinated.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at vaccinations and eligibility. You can join in with your questions or experiences at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, hear from more of you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about vaccine eligibility and supply with Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Still time for your questions about the vaccine process and the available supply, how it's all going, and your experiences. 800-642-1234 is the number. Back to your calls now. Charles is with us in Fall Creek. Charles, hi.
Hi, Dr. Remington. I anticipate that you're going to answer my question with everyone that can get vaccinated should now, but I wanted you to explain maybe a little bit more about my situation, and I feel like the situation of many others in Wisconsin. I've already had the first strain of the coronavirus, and so I don't know how much I will benefit from getting the vaccine. I'm currently eligible, but should I wait for a booster? I think of my mom, who's got multiple sclerosis, that definitely would need to get the first vaccine, and other people that haven't already had the coronavirus. Your thoughts?
Charles, great question, and a lot of people, I think, having that thought. Dr. Remington, if I've already had COVID, should I move to the back of the line for people who have had no exposure?
Yes, that's a great question. We've had just over 570,000 cases in the state reported. That's about 10%. We guess maybe another 5 or 10% of people have been infected and not reported. So with about 20% of the population in the state who've had illness, you could make a good argument that your chance of getting really sick, infected and really sick, is significantly less because you've had infection and recovered. And I think it's reasonable to then say, I would step to the back of the line and let others who are susceptible, and particularly if they're susceptible and high risk, that's the most important group to get vaccinated. I think I was speaking, if there's vaccine going to waste and you get a call that says, if you can get here in 5 minutes, we can give you this, then that, I think better than going to waste is to have everybody who can get a vaccine. But I think it's a really good idea. Again, part of getting vaccinated is to protect yourself, but the other part is to protect the community. And variants, for example, are beginning to show up, and they only show up and evolve if there's transmission. So in a way, getting a vaccine is good for you, but it's also good for the community. But it's a great point. If you've had infection, it's been confirmed, you are at a lower risk of both getting infected and getting sick. You should eventually get vaccinated, but it's reasonable to let others go first.
Charles, thanks for the call. We'll go to Steve next in Sun Prairie. Hello, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, you know, I'm going to disagree with the rollout. I think it was a terrible rollout. I mean, the science tells us that people that are older have a negative outcome more so than people that are younger. It should have been older people and then moved down. The fact that we open it up to teachers who abandon their kids by hiding behind seniors is disgusting. A 21-year-old kid gets the vaccine before a 64-year-old. It made no sense.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. And Dr. Remington, there was the balance people are trying to strike, who's most at risk, who's most exposed, who can most spread it. And of course, for healthcare workers, who do we need to help fight this thing? Can you talk about how we weigh those factors?
Well, we have to do just as you said. We have to weigh the factors, and no decision is without its without the disadvantages. And so you can make a good argument that we should entirely protect those who are vulnerable, the people who are older, and not focus on people who are the source of infection. You could also swing the argument the other way, is that if we stop transmission and we focus on people who are at risk of transmitting, which would be younger people, then the older people will be safe because the virus will not be circulating. But the state really combined those approaches and focused on older people, 65 and older, now focusing on people with chronic conditions. And this is it's a very tough decision to make. And I completely understand the frustration when you see a younger person getting vaccinated. But just think that this is a transition period. We're talking about now weeks where we're going to soon be trying to get people to become more motivated to get vaccinated. We're going to look at people who are hesitant or refusing to get vaccinated. And the effort is going to go from a supply shortage to excess vaccine and then focusing on trying to get everybody to get vaccinated.
Thanks for the call, Steve. We're talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about COVID-19 and the vaccine rollout and who's eligible. We'll go to Rosa next in Waterford. Rosa, hello.
Hello. Last week on my morning drive-in, there was an expert on the radio. He said that there's been a 70% reduction in COVID cases nationwide, and less than 10% of Wisconsinites have received the vaccine. So that's telling me that our immune systems are stronger than we think. I'm pretty sure COVID virus will be around for a very long time. And Dr. Question, ivermectin is very effective. I've talked to a few farmers who actually kill off the COVID virus in their animals. Why aren't we using ivermectin? Per Senator Ron Johnson's hearings in on the Capitol, many doctors have used it successfully to treat
Rosa, COVID. Thanks a lot for the call. So a couple points there. First of all, the big drop in cases January, of course, a nightmare. Dr. Remington, cases have come down since then. A big question as to why that is. I don't think it's about our immune system so much, though.
No, it's really not about our immune system, and we didn't have sufficient number of people vaccinated. Fortunately, people are heeding the advice. We have people who continue to avoid crowds and wear masks. The virus does cycle into susceptible populations. Unfortunately, we have, again, nearly 20% of the population infected. And those people who took risks became infected. So it's a combination of individual immunity, but also safe practices. And it's certainly not treatment with ivermectin. I've watched that Senate hearing. The experts have weighed in. Randomized trials are needed. The gold standard for telling whether a medicine works is a randomized clinical trial, and those trials have not shown that ivermectin works. Anecdotal information is a good way to have a hypothesis, to think about whether something might work, but it's not the test, and so I wouldn't put my trust in untested medicine.
Thanks for the call. Dr. Remington, as you're watching forward now to, we've been talking about the new eligible categories at the end of this month, then we're coming up to May and every adult eligible. I don't know, what are you watching for with supply as the Johnson & Johnson one-shot's hitting the market now?
Well, again, I think it's going to be the sort of the tipping of the fulcrum where one morning we'll wake up and find out that pretty much everybody who wants a vaccine has gotten one. And whether that happens early in May or later in the spring and summer. And we will then begin focusing on people who are reluctant, who have concerns about the safety of the vaccine, who have concerns about vaccines in general. And that's when we need to serve as trusted sources. We have to talk with our healthcare providers, with our public health experts, and encourage people to do this again, not just for themselves, but to stop community transmission. Every time a person gets infected, that's an opportunity for that virus to mutate. And the faster we can get the entire community, as they say, the herd, immune, the faster we'll be able to prevent mutations and not have variants that are more contagious and more deadly. So we all have to do this together, not just to protect ourselves, but to protect the entire community.
Dr. Remington, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
We've been talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us to talk about the latest on the vaccine rollout, who's eligible next, and for answers to all your questions. Thanks for your calls. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 8, Kate and her guest look at the Senate filibuster. where it came from, some of the history behind it, and how it ends up affecting policy these days in Congress. You can join in to answer the question along the way, should the filibuster stay or should it go? It's the filibuster tomorrow at 8 on The Morning Show. Don't call and try to filibuster the show, though. Coming up, it's the news from NPR and from Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll find out how a Western Wisconsin community is trying to hold polluters responsible for PFAS contamination in local water supplies. The city of La Crosse suing many chemical manufacturers. We'll find out why they're doing that and how these kind of lawsuits work on environmental issues in the American legal system. Remember, you can follow all of our great Ideas Network conversations wherever you go with the WPR app. You can put that on your phone, tablet, or other related device. Listen live to this or our other network and go through our archives and listen back to shows as well. You can do the same sorts of things at WPR.org. Or if you're listening on one of those now, you can also listen on a radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.